Cradio.
Welcome to Cradio. This afternoon, we're blessed with speaking with Dr. Deirdre Little. She's joining us in the studio via phone this afternoon to have a bit of a chat to us about something that's quite topical and I think everyone will be quite interested in. If you are a woman, if you are a mother, or if you are married and have a wife, this is something you might want to listen to, so stay tuned. This is a quote from the article that our guest has written that was published in the February 2013 edition of Lifelines. It goes like this. The truth may or may not wear social graces and may not follow a signpost of shared values. Pilate's question returns when the truth is not recognised and out of uniform with the new norms, shrugged off and even spat upon. Truth. What does that sniff, researchers, as the baseline of science slides? What does it matter? Our esteemed guest in the studio is Dr. Deirdre Little. She's a practicing GP obstetrician and is a visiting medical officer at Bellingen Hospital, where she's provided impartum obstetric care for 27 years. Dr. Little is the bioethics officer for Catholic Women's League in New South Wales, and has also had articles concerning prenatal screening and testing published in the secular press. Welcome, Deirdre.
Good afternoon, Natasha.
It's a great pleasure and privilege to have you with us.
Oh, it's an honour to be here.
Now, the article I referred to at the beginning is an article extremely articulately written and a very impressive article that was published, for the listeners that may not be aware, in Family Life International's Lifelines. Now, if you wanted to get the full text of this document, you can go to fli.org.au and it's volume 26 of Lifelines. Now, in this article, you speak about the Gardasil vaccine. So just briefly and in simple terms, what is the Gardasil vaccine?
Okay, the Gardasil vaccine is a vaccination that was really originated in Australia, but it's been prepared to protect people, especially young people, from the effects of human papillomavirus. There are many different types of human papillomavirus. Actually, there are about 100 or more. But of those types, we know that there are about four which will commonly cause cancer. But the vaccine itself protects against two of those. Many of them can cause cancer. Many of that 100 can cause cancer to varying degrees. So there's four strains of human papillomavirus that cause most of the cancer. And two of those strains are covered for by the vaccination. The other two strains of human papillomavirus, which are covered for in the vaccination, only cause genital warts. So the vaccination protects against four types of human papillomavirus, two of which can cause cancer, and two of which just cause warts. But it will not protect against all the other types of human papillomavirus which can cause cervical and genital cancer. So it won't protect against all the cancers that can affect the cervix.
Okay. Now, in the article, there were some concerns raised about young women after having the vaccine. They noticed some changes in their bodies that were put down to the vaccine. Can you mention what some of those were and why perhaps people need to be a bit wary and investigate before having this vaccine?
Okay, look, how this came to my attention was actually through a young girl who came to see me. She was just entering her final year at school, and she's happy for this story.
So sorry to interrupt you, but I'm imagining she's probably about 16 or 17.
She was 16, yes, and she's very happy for this story to be told.
Okay,
I should add. She was 16, and she'd noticed that her periods had started to diminish. They'd become infrequent, irregular, scanty. After she had mostly happened after the last vaccination. There's three vaccinations of Gardasil that are given. There's a course of three. It was after the third one that she mainly noticed the trouble developing. The the trouble was such that she went to see her normal GP, and her normal GP decided to commence her on the oral contraceptive pill to make the cycles appear normal. That's what the pill will do. It will give you a regular cycle, an artificial cycle, by overriding your natural one. So she was given a prescription for the pill, but she was still concerned that she didn't know why this was happening. And so she came for a second opinion to me, and I thought it needed a little bit more investigation because it had been going on for some time. So I, in the course of investigations, we looked for many things that can cause periods to go wacky. We looked for many things that can make them irregular and scant or heavy. Or anyway, everything came back normal except the test for menopause. And so we found that a little bit difficult to believe. So I did another test, which some of the listeners may be aware of. It's a test that's actually called the anti-Müllerian hormone test, but basically it just measures ovarian reserve. In other words, has this person got a lot of reserve left in her ovary, or is her ovary actually already starting to die? And that test came back, the level was unrecordable. In other words, she had no ovarian reserve left that was measurable. So that was fairly astonishing. Now, her question actually to me was, and she asked the question, could this be Gardasil? And I actually initially said to her, no, I don't think so. And then I realised that I didn't have the authority to really say that because I didn't know. So I approached the Therapeutic Goods Administration and started asking questions about other cases. I wanted to know what the rat ovary had looked like after the rats were studied and vaccinated. That's how they tested the vaccine, was with rats. But there was no study done to evaluate the performance of the rat ovary after the rat was vaccinated.
I think quite alarmingly, you mentioned in your article that there was data available for the male
Yes.
organs in the rat that were studied,
yes.
which seem quite almost incomprehensible because the study was for women. The Gardasil vaccine is marketed for women, not for men,
yes.
yet the data was available only on the male reproductive organs that were carried out in the study.
That was quite surprising, and that was why I pursued it a bit further, thinking, well, if there's what we call it histology, if there's microscopy done on the male organs after vaccination, surely there's been proper microscopy done on the female organs, a proper histology report, we call it, on the ovary of a female rat. There was no histology report available on the rat ovary, even under a Freedom of Information application. There was still no information available on the health of the ovary.
And this has been a nationwide campaign encouraging women to get this vaccine. So to think that the information is not available, even through Freedom of Information, tends to ring a few alarm bells in my mind anyway.
It does. It's quite astonishing. The Therapeutic Goods Administration did also inform me that they had other cases notified to them of girls whose periods had become erratic after having had the Gardasil vaccination, but that they hadn't followed them up. So there was no more information available on those cases. And when I actually asked for information about them, I was told that I couldn't be given it.
Goodness. That certainly begs to question what they've got to hide then if this information is either not available or not being released.
It's difficult to know why that information wouldn't be there for women when it's there for girls and women, when it's there for boys, for males. It's very difficult to understand that. But there are numerous other problems in the research that's been done on Gardasil, and some of those concern the surveillance after the vaccine was released. For example, the surveillance depends on ordinary persons, schoolgirls, their parents, actually notifying the Therapeutic Goods Administration of an adverse event. So we're now in a situation where people are being given the vaccination without a lot of information. When they sign a consent form, there's not much information given, and they're not informed of how to notify the Therapeutic Goods Administration if they have any of the following events happen to them. So a lot of these people will have problems after they are vaccinated, and they will go along to the general practitioner, and we've all been told as GPs that there were no significant adverse events after the vaccination in the studies that have been done. But of course the studies that have been done didn't have a true placebo to compare them with. So normally you compare vaccinated persons with persons who've just received a normal saline injection or salt water injection, and then you see if there's any difference in the complaints of the group or what they experience, whether the people would...
And sorry, Deirdre, from a medical research perspective, usually a double-blind study is done, which you just mentioned, with the placebo group, where they...
Exactly.
And with the control group receiving, for example, Gardasil, and this was not done in the
this
case...
It wasn't done with a true inert placebo. It was done with an aluminium-containing placebo. There was a tiny number of people who were assigned to a salt water group after when the study was being done. But that tiny number, those figures then got aggregated together with all the people in the major control group who had been just receiving aluminium injections. So it wasn't a proper control group, and therefore you can make conclusions, because people have reactions to aluminium too, therefore you can make conclusions that there were no extra reactions or not a lot of extra reactions in the vaccinated group. And that did happen in the major study that was done, checking on 21,000 girls after vaccination. There was no true placebo group to which they were randomly signed. We don't usually count active substances as a placebo group. And the other thing was that within that study, which I will quote, it's the clinical trial and post-licensure safety profile of a prophylactic human papillomavirus particle vaccine. The adverse events that were recorded, serious adverse events affecting organ systems, were reviewed by an investigator who was a Merck Sharp and Dohme employee, and then he,
which is a pharmaceutical company.
It was a pharmaceutical company evaluating itself, and they determined of the serious events that were reported from vaccinated girls. The study was published in 2010. They would conclude which ones could have been due to the vaccine and which ones were not. So all cardiac effects or heart effects were discounted. All, just looking down the list here, all the neurological effects were, sorry, 4 out of 5 of the neurological events that happened after vaccination were discounted. All psychiatric events that happened after vaccination were discounted. All renal events which happened after vaccination were discounted. So of the 107 serious adverse events notified after vaccination in this study, Merck Sharp and Dohme decided to discount all but 5.
Goodness. And these are not inconsequential effects. Cardiac, neurological, psychiatric and renal are major effects.
That's exactly right. They're not inconsequential. Now, even if these girls had a pre-existing condition, which is possible, of course, we're not told in the study, but even if they did, it's very important to know whether the vaccine can exacerbate or bring out a recurrence of a previously existing condition. So in a new...
Just to put it in a sense where people can relate to it, so this information needs to be available. If, for example, a young lady of 15 who hopes in the future to get married and have children may have an underlying condition that may contraindicate her having this vaccine, it's important for her to be aware, because these poor young women may be dreaming of having children and perhaps may not be able to post the 3 doses of this vaccine.
Well, that is something to consider. There may be some women for whom this vaccination is contraindicated. There may be some women who should not have this vaccination. Of the reproductive system serious adverse events, which were notified in this study for vaccinated individuals, Merck Sharp and Dunn chose to discount 3/4 of them. Now, we're not told why. That was a Merck Sharp and Dunn decision. They thought that they were not related to the vaccine. So how do they know that is the first question. And I suppose how do we know that for parents giving informed consent is the second question.
Okay, now just to go back to the article, there is a 13-year-old young lady and also a 16-year-old young lady who, after having the three doses of the Gardasil vaccine, went into premature menopause. Now, these young ladies, did they have a family history of early menopause or gynecological problems that could precipitate this?
The particular young lady that I was involved with did not have any family history of significance whatsoever. We went through that with a fine-tooth comb. There was no history of premature menopause in her family. There was no history of conditions which can predispose to premature menopause in her family.
So to have such a marked change of bringing menopause forward by about 30 years, it certainly is alarming to me as a woman.
It is, and I suppose really average age of menopause in Australia today is 50, so it brought it forward, you know, even further than that if you think of it that way. But also it affects all the organs. Premature menopause isn't just a condition of the ovary. It actually has an effect on all the organs. So it's a fairly serious diagnosis. Now, at this point, no one knows what the future holds for her. You said several girls. I notified one and I had written this article up and it was published in the British Medical Journal. You mentioned several. The other cases that the Therapeutic Goods Administration had been notified about, they hadn't followed up. So we don't know what the outcome was for those girls, whether in fact it was menopause or whether it was something else, or whether it was just that they would only have three periods a year, which is not quite the same as menopause. So we don't know what the effect was for the other girls, but there are certainly young women out there, and I've actually notified two others to the Therapeutic Goods Administration. There are two other girls who have about the same age, 16, who have developed scanty irregular periods. The periods haven't stopped, they haven't had hot flushes, but they've become infrequent and irregular.
So these young women, do you think that will they be able to conceive if they get married and would like to start a family?
It's hard to know what the periods will do in the years to come. It's difficult to know that because we don't know. The studies aren't done, so we don't know whether their periods are going to recover. They're not technically menopausal. But it's much harder to fall pregnant, and you certainly have a level of subfertility if you're only having three periods a year. So obviously you only get three opportunities to fall pregnant.
That's right. Only approximately 9 days in the entire year, which might be the ideal time when they're fertile.
Exactly.
Which for a 16-year-old young lady, that prospect certainly
is reduced.
It's just... it just makes me shake my head and think, goodness me, what is going on?
It's some concern. Also, the other studies that have been done since 2007, when the vaccine was sort of introduced here, none of them actually look at periods. None of them actually ask the question for girls to relate what are their periods doing in the first year, the second year, and the third year after vaccination. None of the studies look at that. So it's a completely unknown quantity. All we know is that we do have numerous reports of girls having period problems after vaccination. Elsewhere in the world, premature menopause has also been notified in teenagers after receiving the Gardasil vaccination. Until the research is done, we just don't know. It needs to be tested.
And I think tested perhaps by a body that's it's an impartial body, not a pharmaceutical company that is benefiting from the sale of said vaccine or pharmaceutical item, but perhaps an independent body who can look at the facts and record the data accurately and keep data, for example, from the rats that were tested So we know what the effects could be.
Yes, we definitely, young women, I think, definitely need that. And it would even, at this point, it would even be helpful to at least do the rat studies, to at least go back, vaccinate the rats, check by euthanizing them at intervals over the 5 years, check what their ovaries look like, see what size litters they have, how many litters do they have after they're vaccinated, how many pups, they're not called rats, they're called pups, the offspring of rats, how many are in each litter, what age were those rats when they went through menopause. I mean, we could at least, I think we owe it to our women to at least observe rat fertility after Gardasil vaccination.
And we also owe it, I think, to the young men out there who hope to get married and have a family.
Mm. Yes.
That we have this information available for parents who may be listening to this and thinking about having their daughters vaccinated, or may already have a program in place at their school that is encouraging the young women to have these vaccinations. So we can have some information that parents, husbands and women themselves can look at. Now, if someone is listening who has had the three of these vaccines or started the course, what's your professional advice to them if they do have concerns?
Well, first thing is don't worry. That's the first thing, worry never solves anything. And the second thing is that most people have this vaccination do not seem to have a problem. So we haven't yet quantified the extent of the problem. We don't know, except most people don't seem to, but there's a substantial number who do. So basically any change in well-being, certainly any change in periods, needs to be notified directly to the Therapeutic Goods Administration. They rely on people to do that. You can't rely and you shouldn't rely on someone else to really do it for you. They expect the individual to do it or the individual's parents. So even if for a time periods become irregular and scant, obviously teenagers will have that happen now and again. But if it's a change in the pattern, it definitely needs to be notified. And you can get the form off the internet. You can ask your doctor for a form. Your medical practice should have one. I think actually all the schools which vaccinate young girls with this vaccine, and that's where it's happening, I think every single girl should be given a form to notify the Therapeutic Goods Administration if they have an adverse event following this vaccination, to make it easier for them to do so. And that's part of the proper surveillance that should take place when a fast-tracked vaccine has been introduced.
And also give the responsibility also for the young ladies to have the responsibility of noting down any changes that they may find and to report them, and to know that their health is important and that this information and data is of value.
Exactly.
Because if enough young women are having adverse effects and the TGA is notified, then they'd have to do something about it, something more than what's been done in the past.
That's exactly right. That's what I would suggest. That is the way to go. That is the proper process to take to notify an adverse event.
Now, from my understanding, the Gardasil vaccine is being marketed as a preventative for HPV, human papillomavirus, which can cause cervical cancer. Mm-hmm. Now, if someone wanted to reduce their risks of cervical cancer and catching HPV, other than this vaccine, which is in question, what can they do? What steps can they take to prevent themselves from having cervical cancer or HPV?
Okay. Well, the recommendation is still holds that all women should have regular pap smear screening beginning at age 18 or within 2 years of the first sexual encounter. So that still holds, that's still in place, because that...
And Deirdre, just to clarify, sorry, when you say regular pap smears, at what interval
second,
would
every
be appropriate?
Second year, every 2 years,
okay.
Every woman, vaccinated or not, still needs to have a pap smear. That is the thing that has most reduced the incidence of cancer of the cervix, and it protects, it reduces, has continuing every year, the pap smear program every year, reduces the incidence of cancer of the cervix, because we pick up the lesions before, the little spots on the cervix, before they become cancerous, and so we just remove them. It's a little bit like having a solar keratosis removed from the face, in the sense that you remove it and it's that particular lesion then has been treated. But every 2 years, you keep on having pap smears. If a person has more severe abnormal lesions on the cervix, they will be advised by their doctor to have more close surveillance, which I won't go into here. But certainly, that is one way of, and that is the way to reduce and guard against cancer of the cervix. And all women have to continue with the pap smear program, whether they're vaccinated or not, is the official recommendation.
And if a young lady or a woman of any age has this, well, premenopausal age obviously, but if a woman has this test and abnormal cell changes are noted in the cervix, usually they can be addressed if it's caught early enough.
Oh, exactly.
And this is what a regular pap smear will do. So that's a wonderful way to keep on top of your health in this area and to prevent cervical cancer. And if there are changes, they can be addressed.
Exactly.
And
that
you can move on.
That is vital. And of course, the other thing to remember is that the number of lifetime partners one has is the strongest indicator of whether one is likely to get cancer of the cervix. So obviously, monogamy does confer protection. Mutual monogamy does confer protection.
And another example of how chastity can be a very advantageous thing, not only for our soul and our heart, but also for our health.
Exactly. It has to be monogamous in that situation, but of course even the most chaste person can marry someone who has had partners before, sexual partners before. So I would like to just sort of mention that, because if the HPV vaccine were perfectly safe and were known to be perfectly safe and not cause adverse reactions, then we would have a different situation. But at the moment, because Gardasil vaccine is not fully researched, there are areas of question marks over its effect on female fertility. Therefore, you have to very carefully weigh up, well, what are the alternatives to this vaccine that I should be considering if I want to maintain my health and my fertility? What is the score? What is the burden of disease? What is the burden of the vaccine? Where do I get reliable information? And make an individual decision about what is best for that person.
Excellent advice. Thank you, Dr. Deirdre.
Thank you, Natasha.
Now, you have an upcoming speaking engagement as part of the Hidden Truth Tour. Now, if our listeners would like to see Dr. Deirdre Little and listen to her in person, she will be speaking at the Hidden Truth Tour featuring Steve Mosher, and it's being presented by Family Life International, and she'll be speaking in Sydney on Saturday the 5th of May, Brisbane Friday the 24th of May, Melbourne Saturday the 18th of May, and in Canberra Friday the 17th of May. Now, if you want details for this Hidden Truth Tour, to listen to Deirdre's talk or any of the other speakers, please contact FLI. The website is www.fli.org.au, or you can phone them in Sydney on 02 9519 9111.
Radio.org.au.